There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29th, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30th, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1st, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
Hey, I'm Tyler.
And I'm KC.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
Tonight, I need you by my side. Hold on to me and keep me in the light. And when the shadows get long.
What is happening, all you woods people? Man, I don't know if y'all woods is white or brown out there or what right now, but it is like sunshine where we're at. No chance of snow. I know that some of y'all have been getting pounded with the winter weather.
Pounded.
Pooned, as our friend Mark Kenyon would say, who's going to be on this podcast. Mark came down to meet the challenge of hunting in Texas on some public ground. We're going to talk all about that. It was a lot of fun. It was an intense hunt.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun doing it. But that doesn't mean that it was fun, really, to tell you the truth of the matter.
Best part was eating Mexican food, man.
Yeah, that's, dude.
I mean, all week long, just hammering.
I know, man. Like, it all radiates out of, like, the good Mexican food from Oklahoma trickles down into Texas, right? And that kind of how...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly
what happens.
How it works. And those Oklahomans can make a mean chorizo.
They can. That was one of those trips where, like... Tasty treats sure does make the hard work a little bit easier, I guess. We gained some weight on the trip.
Yeah, I've been having to fast since I got back, dude.
We actually spent a lot of time, and you'll hear Mark talk about this quite a bit. We spent a ton of time mapping on this trip, and it's just one of those things where when you go to a new place and you don't really know your way around, it just, you cannot beat having a map in your pocket on your phone like you do with OnX, and then you can send and share waypoints and just strategize and do your best for everybody to come up with a plan. Like, for instance, we all kind of ended up keying in on, like, these lower creaky areas that were between high points as being places that deer would cruise, but without having the ability to, like, show that on a map to someone else, like, while it's happening, pretty much, it'd be kind of hard to, I guess, cross mediums there and understand what the other person is talking about. So Onyx was a super huge help.
Stuff will be hard to navigate in the dark.
Dude, can you imagine?
Without it.
Dudes that like
I know back
Francisco Coronado or whoever came across there looking for the seven cities of Cibola, you know, like them dudes didn't have a clue where they were going.
No, dude.
They just did it.
Yeah.
We're weak.
They thought that. Yeah, we are. I thought about that last night, man. I thought about that last night.
I get mad I don't have the right toilet paper at the house. You know what I mean? Like, those guys are literally just
they didn't have no toilet paper.
They
were doing it Eric Gentry style.
Using
you know what I mean?
Prickles.
Just straight up taking their neck gaiters and wasting $30 a pop,
That's
you know?
That's it.
Well, not waste, I guess.
Yeah,
you know,
it's true. I mean, there is some waste if you want to get down to it.
My goodness. Yeah. Well,
but whitetail's not over for us.
No,
right now.
We're still going. We'll probably be hunting whitetails as long as we can possibly make it work.
Yeah.
I mean, if we can hunt whitetails in March, I'm all about it. You know what I mean?
Well, I just actually made a post on social talking about how the Team Element killed an August whitetail this year, which is wild.
Yep.
Hunter did that.
Way to go, Hunter.
Way to go, Hunter.
Hunt.
Greg filmed that one. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
We're on social right now. We are actually kind of doing a recap of the year of 2022, mm-hmm. which is kind of fun because we couldn't really fit it all in one post, so we're just posting stuff throughout the week. Y'all go relive that with us if you haven't. But looking forward right now, we got another whitetail hunt we're fixing to leave on right now. And we never stop hunting because it's what we love to do. Mm-hmm. So right after that, well, today, I'm heading out to do some prep work for some pig hunting that we got coming up.
Yep, going to get a little corny today.
Ooh, I actually tend to stay in that state, but I'm going to distribute some of that corniness, you know.
Dad jokes.
That's
you
it.
Know how to tell when a joke is a dad joke?
How's that?
When it's a parent.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it is.
I like it.
It works on multiple levels.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to do some pig work. You know, there's a lot of different ways we'll be hunting pigs, but I am excited to be hunting ambush style is a fun way to hunt them. I can't really say I like any of it better than the other, but like there's nothing like when you're sitting there in what I would be sitting in a cruiser saddle and all of a sudden you hear like pigs just get mad at each other, you know, in the woods. And then here about 20 minutes later, you see something black moving through the woods coming to you, and it's a whole group of pigs coming in. And it's just a fun, exciting moment that's different than deer in a lot of ways, but not any less cool in a lot of instances.
You know, one of the reasons I like it and why it's different and cool?
Why is that?
Every single one of them is a target.
Yeah.
You know, like a deer, like one out of every 20 is one that you're going to try to shoot. Or, you know, it's an arbitrary number. But, like, with a pig, if that brown one with the stripe over there turns to where I don't have a good shot, oh, look, that black one that's a little bit smaller, that's at 15 yards, I'm going to shoot that one instead.
Yeah.
It's like, just keep on rolling.
So, to talk a little bit, just real briefly, we won't do a whole bunch of pig talk, but to talk a little bit of strategy here, one thing that's super helpful for us, here's the thing, guys. We like to eat pigs.
Mm-hmm.
They are tasty.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more we can shoot them, the more happy we are, pretty much.
I'm going to do a little mixing this year, by the way. I think I'm going to grind some pig and deer together.
Dude, I was just thinking about this the other day because I got pork added to some of my venison at a processor this year, and it's so good, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way to go. But anyway, so the best way to make sure that we're like in the pigs a lot is we run Moultrie cell cameras, and so Moultrie Mobile has the Edge camera, which is their new camera that basically will connect to any service provider, whichever one is the best strongest signal in that area. And we hunt pigs in some low-lying no cell service areas, and we're able to get pictures sent to our phones, and so we know a lot about these pigs daily and don't have to make, honestly, like some of these places we hunt are not that far as the crow flies, but to get down into the bottoms and all that just takes forever. You got to open gates, you got to drive down this road and that road, and it's this one's, you know, got a limb in the way or whatever. And so not only are we able to just set the camera and kind of forget the camera, we can tell a lot about where they're coming in on the daily. And so that helps us. Like if we're going to go hop in a saddle, right? Like we're going to be able to hop in the saddle on the right wind in the right tree. Right. And not get caught by pigs coming in. Right. So,
yeah, it's pretty nice. And you know, we sometimes don't give pigs enough credit for how they can see. It's not that they are blind as a bat, as I've heard people describe them, but they don't see as good as a deer by any means. But still, like, we've been picked off on the ground a few times by pigs, mm-hmm. and it's you can stand there, I mean, sit there like a stump, and they won't do anything. But you got to move, and they're weird.
Mm-hmm.
But they're, like, they're bolder than deer. So, like, you're trying to draw your bow, and then they just look at, turn and look at you and don't give you a shot, right? So, still, the elevation of a saddle helps you with that. You know, it's just kind of nice to be there participating in nature and not being an interference, and you get that when you're in the tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. You know what they call participating in nature?
What, P-I-N? Pin.
Your pin. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm pretty excited about the pig thing. I got a new book for Christmas my wife bought me called The Hog Book. You might recognize it from our friend Jesse Griffiths. It's got all things hogs in it, and so it's got me super juiced up right now to do some processing and hunting, yeah. You know, as well. So that's the plan, man.
I am ready to take some pictures of with my phone out of there and steal some recipes.
Yeah, dang Jesse, hope you ain't listening.
You know, books are a community thing, right?
So sure.
We can share it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in the public domain, right?
That's right.
Everything. Music, too.
Yeah, for sure. Well,
I love creating music that people steal.
Mark thought he was in the public domain until he got off the airplane in San Antonio and then realized he was in a new country then. so I think without further ado, as to use a phrase that he says on his podcast from time to time.
Really?
Yeah, Mark likes those. Like,
I thought his saying was "that being said."
Oh, with that being said. He also says that or long story short a lot, which means be ready for a long story.
Be ready for me to continue on.
Yeah, Mark's got some takes and some thoughts as a guy who's never hunted Texas, who came down and hunted Texas. So that probably is you. Potentially not. I know some of our loyal listeners are definitely from our great home state, and we appreciate all y'all that are listening. But it's pretty cool to see kind of just how perceptions change a little bit, and maybe just how, I don't know, everybody dreams about hunting some wild, crazy place growing up, and I know Mark was no different, you know, because you see Texas on TV a lot, and it's just like us when we get to go somewhere else, like it's never what you thought it was going to be, but at the same time, it's always pretty cool to go explore. But mm-hmm. I'll stop putting words in Mark's mouth now, and we'll let him talk about it instead. On the phone, we have got our now good friend, a guy I've actually got to spend time with. Tyler, you know, already has, like, those relationships with Mark. But
yeah, we fished in Idaho this
that's
year.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, I know Mark Kenyon personally as well. So, Mark Kenyon, Wired to Hunt. How are you today, man?
Man, I'm great. I'm good. Really good. I'm enjoying a couple days relaxation post-Christmas. And still coming off of the good time vibes, spend some time with you guys down in Texas. So, man, I couldn't be any better.
Good, man. Did you gain any weight while you're here?
I've been afraid to weigh myself, so I can't say officially, but I must have.
I gained 5 pounds.
Did you really?
Yeah. I don't know when the last time I weighed before that was, but I definitely have been weighing heavy the last few days and weighed 5 pounds more than I did. So before the trip at some point.
I mean, we're eating 2-foot burritos almost. So you can't expect not to add a couple notches to the belt.
2 foot. Mark, is that how you do the trout? Is that how you do trout too, man? Just a little, add some inches there.
I round up with everything, guys.
Yeah.
If you don't know Mark and haven't seen like how he measures things, he definitely has like a specific hand motion for his measurement system that is very unique.
Yeah. Is the burrito like this or like this?
Well, glad you made it home safe, man. I know there was like a blizzard and stuff that a lot of the North dealt with. We dealt with the bitter cold down here, but not the weather too much. But it kind of was like a weird thing for our hunt because we're right on the cusp of like some really good hunting weather, but at the same time it was right up against Christmas and we had to part ways pretty quickly there right before it so that everybody could make it home. So
I was glad I got to move my flight up a little bit. It nixed the morning hunt that day, but like I was telling you guys before we aired, you know, I rolled into my home just like minutes after the blizzard hit. And so if I had been 6 hours later, it probably would have been disastrous. Actually, the flight I was originally going to be on got delayed a ton. So I was fortunate that I made the move and snuck in just in time. And my wife was happy I didn't miss Christmas and all was well. So so it was a good move. And, you know, I was hoping to get that last minute magic that morning, which we didn't get to do. But, you know, it's all right. It was a good time. I can't wait to talk about it because it was a heck of a hunt.
Yeah, it was. You know, started off really on a good note as well. We actually picked you up at an airport and made our way into Mexican food country, and we decided to stop at a food truck. And this was probably your favorite surprise of the whole trip, I would imagine. But we had some really cool shirts on that we surprised you with, and this is all going to be this is all on video. This is going to be a part of the Buck Truck series we've been talking about for the last however many months. So this will be probably likely the last episode. So we saved the best for last, Mark. And we revealed a new Wired to Hunt design for your t-shirts. For you,
I think it's gonna stick.
It's gonna do well.
It's gonna be a catchy one. Yeah, it's gonna do real well on the site.
I won't reveal exactly what it is. You'll have to watch and see on YouTube. It'll be on the Meat Eater channel. But pretty exciting. You got a good kick out of that. We ate some good Mexican food, and then we made our way to some public land, which you know, in Texas, it's kind of a weird thing sometimes. Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of people reach out like, no way, you're not hunting public land down there. There's no public land. Where could this be?
Yeah.
Had a lot of disbelief from folks when
they
heard
what
I was
doing.
None.
I just like to mislead people as much as we can. So, there's none.
You sure you guys don't want to edit the last minute and a half out and rephrase what we just did so we headed down for a private guided hunt on a ranch?
Yeah, this is what high fence hunting's like here in Texas. It's real hard.
And we didn't kill any deer. How did that happen?
Mark, as we get into that, I want to ask you a question. So, actually, probably two questions because this is multifaceted. But you're a guy who gets like jokes played on some and like people joke with a lot. Has it always been that way? Is it because you're really good at taking them, or why is that?
I don't know if that's like something I would say is like a thing.
Yeah.
But I would say I like to be part of good jokes. Like I enjoy laughing. I like giving everybody's crap. I like,
there you go.
I'm good at taking it and laughing about it.
Yeah.
And giving it right back. So yeah, like I enjoyed sparring with you guys a little bit.
We had some practical jokes throughout the trip that were pretty fun. So
I thoroughly enjoyed those little ones. And you got the last laugh on me, man. I was bumming because I thought I had the last laugh on you. And I kept waiting for you to be like, dang it, Mark, you got me.
Yeah.
And instead
you flew a pepper to Michigan.
I flew a pepper to Michigan.
Almost got caught in customs, dude. If you'd went just about 100 miles north, they'd have pulled you to the side.
I was laying in bed about to go to sleep when you texted me and said, hey, you trying your shirt yet? And I'm like, as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, no. What did I do? Like, that's not a normal question. So I got out of bed at like 11 o'clock at night, walked out to the suitcase, pulled it out. I was like,
Of course, went down and sampled the local fare. And one of the things you get when you go to different parts of the state is, like, better produce. So we bought a bunch of peppers, serranos to be particular, at the grocery store. And actually didn't get to use them like I wanted to. But they still came into good use because I put one in Mark's boot one day. And then it ended up on my pillow, and then it ended up in Mark's shirt that ended up in his suitcase that he didn't find until probably Christmas Day. So it's fun. But
we had a buck truck prank going that you probably didn't know about. There was a black banana that had made its way into – it was actually yellow when it made its way into the buck truck. And it ended up turning black over a few days. And we like to put that thing kind of in a weird, funny looking position in the seat. And so we would like try to hide it in each other's seat every day. You had to be careful about sitting in the buck truck. Nobody ever sat on it, but there were some close calls. You
we
know?
Hardly talked about it too. It was like a, you know, it's an unspoken thing. Yeah. It's pretty good.
This is the best.
Yeah. You and I were riding in the buck truck together down there, and we were talking about all kinds of stuff, and it was a good time actually. I appreciate, you know, getting to kind of have a drive. It's one of the things you have in Texas is drive time because it's such a big state. But we got to talk about all kinds of stuff. But on the way, I spotted some black buck that were out in the pasture, and you just go, man, Texas is a weird place or something like that. Which is funny because
one could say weird to hunt.
Yeah, one could say it's a weird place to hunt. That was funny to me because that's probably the most – like tame, not tame in the sense of like pet the animal, but tame in the sense of like not exotic,
kind of normal,
exotic. Yeah, pretty normal thing to see in a good part of the state. And you know, you were like kind of flabbergasted at those. I don't know what you'd done if you saw like a zebra or something.
Yeah, what were some of the things that kind of took you aback when you were down here?
Well, I mean, just driving, I mean, all the fences, I mean, that's a thing. Like, I was expecting that, but then when you see it, I had two thoughts on the fences. Like, number one, they're everywhere. Everything's like a ranch. Everything's got the big gates, you know, like the big tall kind of entry gate and the big swinging entrance and the fences everywhere. And so that was like, okay, yeah, this is kind of what I expected. It looks very much like what I imagine like parts of Africa looking like or something, just kind of sprawling, brushy, shrubby country, dry as all get out. But you know, the fences weren't as high as I was expecting. Like, I guess, like, they don't, 8 feet doesn't look as tall in person as you imagine it looking when you think about it. Mm-hmm. So looking at it, it wasn't as visually disturbing maybe as I was expecting. I'm not sure if that's the right way to describe it, but it didn't look that terribly different than just someone with like a barbed wire fence running along their property. It was different, but not that different.
You know, I bet the first person to see a five wire barbed wire was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they're fencing their place. You know, like it's probably a pretty relative thing. Would you think that like giant windmills on the landscape or the fence was a more obtrusive thing?
I didn't even notice the windmills. No, were there windmills?
No, I'm just saying, like, when you think about, like, you're seeing stuff out in the wild.
Oh, yeah. I would say the windmills are more, like, obtrusive than the fence, honestly. Yeah. The windmills are like alien spaceships come down everywhere. We've got those all over by me now. And when they first came in, I hated them.
I despise them.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like them.
You kind of get used to them, I guess, after a while. But, yeah, I don't – I mean – I'm a hippy dippy, so I'm all about that green energy. But
I love killing all them migratory birds, dude. Just kill them dead.
But I don't love the impact on the view shed or the, you know, displaced habitat.
Yeah, that's the view is the thing for me. It's like sometimes you want to be sitting in a deer stand and just feel like you're out away from everything, and when you got a big windmill that's making noise, or just, you know, a bunch of them in your view, you just feel like, well, I'm not that far away from, you know, human activity. So
I mean, Mark wrote a whole book about that.
I actually wrote a whole article about this very thing on the Meteor website. You can check it out. It says it's something like, can whitetails and windmills coexist?
Yeah, Mark, we do plugs at the end, so if you can.
No, I'm kidding. ABS, guys, always be selling or pitching your articles.
Obligatory now, but we'll link to that down below because it's probably pretty interesting. I think I might have read it. I don't you know, things get a little convoluted after it's been
a while. I think we promoted it on the last episode of Rut Fresh.
Did we?
Yep. You're welcome, Mark. We'll take that check anytime. Even know that. Yeah. You owe us for that in the, you know, see what happens comments as well.
So you were talking about the thing. Sorry.
You were talking
about the things that you noticed the most, and I think maybe you had another point there.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, so I was talking about the fences. I was talking about just how the country looked. And then, of course, just like the possibility of seeing this wild stuff like that you're not used to seeing that, you know, that shouldn't be there. So like seeing the black buck, seeing other, I'm trying to think whatever, I think we saw some axis deer. I think we saw something else.
Sheep?
I just remember looking around and being like, man, I don't know what I'm going to see. I don't know what that thing is, but it doesn't look familiar. Who knows what could be around the next corner? And I just, that's when I think I said, man, this is just a weird place. Like the fact that you could see all these bizarre critters was, you know, was different.
Yeah.
And it's just, Texas is one of a kind, it sure seems like, when it comes to wildlife. I mean, you guys just kind of, you guys created your own path.
Yeah.
And it was cool to get to see it. I'm glad I got to see it. And I'm really glad I got to experience like a totally different part of it that I really liked.
Yeah. Did you know, this is something, we travel a lot, all three of us, but you know, I end up in places a lot of times where I get off a plane and I'm like, man, this is just, people look different than where I'm from. I think that kind of was something that you may have expressed, what you just kind of, you know, did you just feel immediately like you were in a, you know, different country almost, you know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, you know, when you get to South Texas, it's very different than North US.
Yep.
So, you know, culturally, obviously, right, there's a lot, more Hispanic influence down there, which is just like a noticeable thing with everything around you. Mm. Which is cool, different, but cool. Like one thing I noticed is like people were really into the World Cup in the airport. Yeah. I don't think anyone knew what the World Cup was up in Michigan, but down in Texas, there was a lot of people really excited about it. Like people were watching it live on the plane when I was flying and going nuts. And I'm thinking like, what's going on? Like, what are these people watching? Mm-hmm. And then I realized it's a soccer game.
Yeah. Not a lot of Ovechkins down here.
No,
you know, I actually was on a soccer team growing up for a while. We were really good locally at least. And, one of my teams was named the Flying Burritos. That was the name of the team.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. We didn't lose a game until we went to Dallas. And then of course, you know, we played a lot of people, but we were good that year, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Flying Burritos.
But yeah, man, I'll tell you what, one cultural thing that was different that I really, really, really love was the food. And I remember just stepping off the airport right away thinking, like, man, I need to break into one of these, get into a burrito or something here real fast, because I love Mexican food. Mm-hmm. And that was the one thing, like, ahead of the trip with you guys. Like, guys, I don't care about the deer. I don't care about the company. I just want to make sure we eat Mexican food every day. And you guys have fulfilled that.
Yeah.
You fulfilled that wish.
Oh, how's your stomach and digestive system after the donkeys that you ate?
It's back to normal now.
Good.
But after that first full donkey really, like, put me down for the count. I've never had a burrito hit me across the face like that and lay me out.
So on the front end, you do pretty good. I was surprised. I really thought that you were going to, you know, have the northern, like, oh, ketchup is spicy type thing. But you do pretty good with the spice, man.
Yeah.
I was impressed. Yeah.
I like my spice.
Yeah.
It was just two. I just ate. That was a big burrito. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like two, like, in all seriousness, what, maybe 10 inches each, half? So it might have been like 20 inches.
You're the
total
measurement man. So, yeah.
I trust you on that, man, for sure.
I think it was probably a 20-inch burrito in all seriousness.
Yeah.
So that was a lot. It was really, really, really good. But it was a little bit too big.
That's another southern thing, too, is like we, our portions, I think, tend to be bigger than other places. So, at least in my travels, I've noticed that, you know, it's like you come home and just the amount of sides on a dinner that somebody will make is outrageous sometimes, you know. Yeah. So
I love it.
Got the pile in place. Well, at about that point, we actually start doing some hunting, which is nice because you said you didn't care about the deer, but we do, Mark. Okay. So I'm kidding. But Greg's not here, but he's hunted the area before. He was on the trip with us, and he kind of, like, you and him, I think, kind of did some collaboration as to what you were maybe wanting to experience or see and do. Like, what was your intent with the hunting?
Well, you know,
you remarked at how we intentionally mispronounce things sometimes, especially when it came to Spanish words. Yeah. You didn't know what an avocado was.
So. Or a manga.
A manga. Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, me and Greg got talking that first night. He was kind of asking what I was looking for, what I was hoping to be able to do. And, you know, the thing I had envisioned, I didn't know if it would be possible, but the thing I kind of imagined when you guys first floated like some high level, I guess some high level information about this area, I envisioned like walking, hiking around kind of hilly open country and rattling and glassing and spotting and stalking on whitetails. And so when I mentioned that to Greg, he said, well, this unit over here probably would be the best bet for you to get that kind of thing. And basically that was what I had to go off. He said like, hey, there's like a decent glassing knob, kind of this kind of area right here. Gave me a pin for that glassing spot. It wasn't even a glassing spot. It was like a spot to wait until daylight. And then from there you could find a glassing spot. And that was basically what I had to go with leading into day one. And I just, you know, hiked down to this unit in the dark, having zero idea what it would look like. I mean, basically nothing other than looking at a couple pictures on Google, I guess. And just waited for sunrise.
You had a pretty good hunt that morning, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Do you want me to walk you through the,
I would love that. Hunt? I would love that. Man.
But slower pace because I can't keep up with your walking.
does long strides apply to my mouth too?
No. You actually have a very nice pace when it comes to conversation, but literally your walking pace is probably top notch. I mean, I don't know if you've ever explored Olympic walking, but it is a sport.
If there was ever a sport that I would, you know, possibly have a chance of competing in, that would probably be the only one.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Yeah, I can walk and I can go up high angled hillsides. Those are my two things I'm good at.
Oh, Billy Goat Mark. It's the thing with the mustache, I think. We have another friend who has a mustache, yeah, and he also is part Billy Goat. So that might be it.
Yeah, the mustache comes in handy for a lot of things. It really has been a paradigm shift for me.
Yeah,
it's changed my love life, my hunting life, my career.
Wow,
it's really all went up a notch or two. So yeah, if you're ever in need for that little level up, you know how to do it now.
Dude, based off the video from Wired to Hunt Channel you showed me from like 13 years ago, I mean, there was nothing but a level up or two to go. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's been one of the keys to my success is start really, really, really low.
Yeah.
And then any progress is impressive.
Over-impressed, man, you know.
Yep. So my hunt, you jerks. That first day, I got to this spot and waited until I could see a little bit. And then once I could see, so there's a little bit of a high spot up to my left. So I thought, well, let's get up there. And then I could look down onto these different, you know, points that descend down beneath me. And I noticed on my map two things that were interesting. Number one, I knew that these points were going to be some kind of deer funneling feature in one way or another. And then I noticed that there was two saddles on two of these points. That, you know, might allow deer to cross from point to point more easily. So I almost went straight to those saddles, but as it got light, I realized, you know what, let's just see what this looks like. Cause I don't know, you know, I don't know much about this water source, how high the water is. I don't know what, you know, I've got an idea in the map, but I want to see it. So I decided let's get to the high spot. So I get up to the high spot and I start glassing me and Michael and, or Spike as we call him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could see a lot of country. It wasn't super high. I don't know, maybe a couple hundred feet above the rest of the country, but it was enough that I could see, you know, a good bit of three different large points that have this thick brushy stuff. But there were no trees at all within my view. So there was nothing, you know, nothing higher than probably my shoulders, maybe, except for some of the cactus. So yeah, first hour and a half or so was just standing up there glassing. And I love that kind of stuff. Like this is probably one of my very favorite types of deer hunting is being in relatively open country where you can glass, observe, and then make a move. Either make a move on the ground and actually stalk on them or make a move later in the day with a tree stand or saddle or something like that. I just really love where you can see what deer are doing and adjust to it and make a play. Mm. So to make the day speed up a little bit, as we joke, long story short, I eventually, I think an hour and a half in or so, had seen, I'd seen a few does, but finally saw a buck. And right away, I was like, oh, that's a nice buck. Like, that's a shooter buck. And my goal coming down was like basically any decent deer, any decent buck I was going to take a crack at. And in my eyes, like a decent buck was anything bigger than a year and a half old, what I thought a year and a half old buck was. So, you know, like a little 8-pointer or something like that. This buck was
Michigan
10-pointer.
Mature,
like
right? Isn't that what y'all call them up there? Michigan mature bucks?
No. Although some Michiganders would. But this buck was like a definite shooter, like a nice 10-point buck. So I was like, dang, like that's a good one. And so I watched him and he's kind of, you know, walking like he's, you could just, you know, that look where there seems like a buck's with a doe. He's kind of walking with a purpose, not cruising, but kind of like standing over something and then kind of walking over towards where you think another buck might be. He's doing that kind of thing. And then I saw another two little bucks kind of circling. So right away, I'm like, all right, well, this buck's with a doe. There's a hot doe in the area. And that guy disappears down like this deep canyon hole there. And not 30 seconds, a minute later, I see another buck come out of there. And at first, I think it's the same one. But as I look at it more, I'm realizing, no, that's a totally different big buck. This is like a wider, dark horn buck. Also a 10-pointer, but probably bigger. So I'm really excited at this point. And we end up watching that deer kind of cruise all over the place, moving around, kind of pushing off other little deer, and end up watching him work down one of these points. And at this point, I'm thinking he's checking does or following does, but then he just was doing his own thing. And I'm just at this time trying to think about, okay, where is he going and when can I make some kind of move to get ahead of him or intercept him? At one point, it looked like he might come our way, and I made a small shift down and got ready to possibly try rattling to him, but then he turned and headed off down the point again. So this whole period lasted maybe, I don't know, 15 minutes of watching him and just trying to see, you know, at what point I could adjust. He just was in kind of relatively open stuff, about 200, 250 yards away maybe, and there was no way I could really move without him spotting me. But eventually he drops down into this coulee or this draw. And that was my opportunity. So as soon as he dipped out of sight, I thought I should have some time. If he's down there where that other big buck had gone, there's probably a doe down there. I bet you he's going to be in there for a minute. So me and Mike took off on a sprint to circle.
Spike?
Spike, yeah, what I call?
You call
him
Mike. I don't know who that is.
I don't know who that is. So basically sprinted to try to get downwind and around behind where they had gone in. So trying to get down the other side of the point so that no deer could see me that had been on that side of the mountain, that side of the hill, and then get downwind of where they were, which required me to make like a really big J hook. You know, almost had to go from like basically from 12 to 6 is what I had to get to. But really almost more like 12 to 7 or 8, really, by the time it was all said and done on the face of the clock, if you can imagine that laying down on the ground. And, so just hightailed it, run through there, and me and Spike both just got tore up with cactus spikes and spines and prickers and pokers and thorns and all that kind of stuff. But we were able to cover that ground. It probably took us, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes or something. Like that. It took us quite a while once we, you know, we ran for a ways. And then once we got into like the zone of, you know, concern where it seemed like I might be getting close enough, there could be deer getting close by, we slowed down to a sneak. But we're able to finally get into that little draw where these deer dropped into, and pretty quickly spotted a little buck and another little buck. And then all of a sudden there's tines. The big boy was just across the canyon from us. Mm. So maybe around 100 yards away, but on the other side of this deep draw.
Let me stop you real quick. You're talking distance here. And you kind of have a thing going on that I think that it'd be good to learn if people maybe don't have this naturally, and some people do, but there's a hunter's instinct of like understanding the cushion or the radius that a deer can kind of tolerate before they start like really alerting. You know, like how did you decide at that point, like when it's time to slow down? Were you looking at your map and kind of thinking about where they were? Was it a feel thing or kind of explain that a little bit?
Yeah, it's a good question. So it was based on a couple things. It was, you know, when I was on the other side of a piece of terrain and, you know, several hundred yards away, I felt really comfortable being loud and moving fast. So I had marked on my map where they were at. So as I had a kind of a general sense of things from my glassing, but then I was also referencing the map on my phone as I was going along to make sure like what I thought was the right point was also the correct point on the map, because it was still new country to me. And so when I had like a big hill or several canyons, you know, in between me and where those deer were, I felt comfortable just cruising fast and not worrying about it. But when I got to the point where either A, I could be visible by where those deer had been, or B, where I thought, expected that I could possibly be heard by them, you know, that's when I really turned things down. And so that was, you know, when I was within, I don't know, 150, 100 yards or so, somewhere in that 150-yard circle. And when I had crested one of these points to the point where now there's no big hills, there's no canyons or anything blocking me from them, at that point, I was like, okay, now it's just straight air between me and where those deer probably are. Now I need to be really careful about my sounds and my movement because they can hear or see me quite likely. And then I'd already accounted for the wind because I circled way downwind. So now my wind would be blowing from them to me while it was the opposite when I started. So now I'd moved to full-blown creep mode. I'm creeping and crawling. I'm hunkered down as low as I can get. Sneaking in, you know, beneath the level of those bushes, and like I said, end up seeing those bucks. And are you guys laughing at me?
Yeah, I said full blown creep mode. I didn't know you ever left.
I thought maybe I pronounced something weird.
No, I just thought it was funny that you think that you're out of creep mode ever.
Yeah, fair point. The basic gist of what happened here is that I end up spotting that big 10 point, the first big buck I saw again. And he seems like he's like standing with the doe. You can't see her, but he's doing the thing where every time a little buck comes up, he runs him off. He goes back to where he was. And little Spike comes back, he runs him off. So I'm thinking, all right, we've got this big deer across the coulee from me, 100, 110 yards, something like that. But you know, nothing but air between us. And it, you know, feels like you're close. So I'm sitting there thinking about how we're going to make a move or when we're going to make a move to try to get closer to him. And then all of a sudden there's a doe like right in front of me, 7 yards away. There's brush in between us, but you know, I can see her well. She walks right across in front of us, goes back behind me, bounces off. And I turn around like a Spike. I'm like, geez. And next thing I'm thinking is like, all right, is there a buck behind her? So I'm watching, I'm listening, I'm watching, I'm listening. It was so weird that we never heard her. I mean, she came so close to us. But nothing. And it's dry country out there. So I would have thought you could hear something from a mile away, but this happened a lot. Like there was a lot of deer that we couldn't hear until they were right on top. And the only thing I can figure is like, they're just such small body deer that they're very light footed. So they're not crushing stuff as much. They're kind of just lightly, daintily walking through this dirt. And unless they, you know, knock some rocks, which does happen, you almost don't hear anything. That was the only thing we ever heard would be like rocks and pebbles being shifted. That's what we ended up listening for. But I'm looking for a buck, listening for a buck, nothing. So I remember glancing back towards the big deer across the canyon. I'm looking at him again to see if he's still there. And then the next thing I know, there's a buck right in front of me, 7 yards away, right where that doe had been. And it's the other big 10 pointer from earlier that morning. And he's behind this brush still, but there he is. So I start, you know, trying to get my bow ready, and I'm slowly moving, and Spike was, you know, slowly moving behind me. And, you know, something, either us just being there or the slow movements from one of the two of us, something caught his eye, and he spun around and bounced off right away. So that was, it wasn't even disappointing though, for whatever reason, because the other deer was across the way and it was just shocking. We just like laughed like, oh my gosh, that was nuts. And so now my attention turned back to the one across the way. He ends up, bedding down and beds in such a way that he's facing us, but there's a bush kind of in between us. Like I can still see him through the bush, but, I thought, you know, maybe if we just belly crawl out of here, we could get out of sight of him, drop down to the other side of the point and make a circling, you know, stalk on him and try to get to his side or get close enough to him that maybe a grunt would be enough to get him to stand up and come our way. He kind of scared off a whole lot of does, or not does, bucks, other bucks. Like every time a little buck came within like 50 yards of him, he would stand up and go chase him off. So I thought, you know, if we can get in close to him and grunt, he might come 20, 30 yards our way and give us a shot. And I realize I'm talking way too much, so I'm sorry. I'm going to try to speed this up.
Long more. Story short, right?
God, I do this way too much. So what was that, like an hour and a half stalk, belly crawl, move down this canyon. He eventually stands up. He runs off another buck. And in that moment, and he stands up, I'm now all the way down to almost to the bottom of the canyon just beneath him, but on the other side still. And I couldn't make that move while he was bedded, but he stands up to chase off this buck. And I'm like, all right, this is our chance. We got to go. So we sprinted across the bottom of the canyon in what would have been plain sight of where he was 15 seconds earlier. And I didn't know how soon he would turn around, come back to his bed. So we just ran, sprinted across the canyon, got to his side underneath him, got over a little lip, crawled up the opposite side, circled all the way above him with the wind kind of just blowing off the corner of where he was. And, as I'm stalking in towards where he had been, you know, I'm within now, I don't know, 60 yards maybe of where I thought he had been bedded. And, you know, within that zone of where he probably was after pushing that buck off, I just see Tynes on the other side of the hill. And he's walking just over the rise from us. I range him. He's at 45 yards. I start walking, trying to like get enough of the rise, you know, beneath me so I could see vitals. But as I start to do that, he turns and he's going to walk right at me. So now he's facing me at 45 yards, walking straight at me. So now I'm thinking, all right, this is my chance. Now I got to get down and not be seen. So I drop down. My arrow's knocked. I'm all ready, getting ready to draw back, hoping he comes over the rise and gives me a shot. But now he turns and then starts paralleling me again. And I'm just seeing the top of his antlers or top of his ears kind of at this point. I try a couple grunts, wait, nothing. And so after, I don't know, I waited a little while, maybe 30 seconds, a minute, something. And he's still not, I can't see him. I stand up, still can't see him. So then I start like stalking towards where he'd last been seen. And he's gone. Like we kept walking around, looking around, glassing, like he just disappeared from the world. Never saw him again. Don't know what happened. Never heard him spook. Never saw him spook. But he was gone. And that was that first day. We did some more of the same kind of thing that night. Saw some little bucks and does. But that was my very long-winded way of telling you about that first.
No, it's a good story.
Well, it was one of the better encounters, I feel like, out of all of us on the trip, probably, you know, one of the better mornings or I guess hunts, you know, from between mornings and evenings. And it's definitely worth talking about. What would you have done different?
You know, the only thing, I guess I felt really good about the play I made on that 10 pointer that was across the way. You know, the only other thing that could have maybe made that one work out, like it was an aggressive move to make the big swooping J hook the first time. It was an aggressive move to charge down the canyon, get across on his side and get all the way behind him. All that stuff, you know, worked out and I got to within 45 yards. The only thing I guess I wish I'd done is rather than dropping down to my knees and waiting for him to come over the hill towards me for a shot, I guess the only other thing I could have done that maybe would have led to a shot is if I would have stayed standing and when he turned to kind of walk parallel to me, maybe wait till he stepped behind a bush. And then, you know, I walked 5 yards further to crest more of the hill to be able to see his vitals. And then maybe I could have got shot, you know, cause I got down to my knees counting on him coming towards me the next, you know, 5 to 7 yards. And instead he didn't do that. So, you know, in that case, it got about as close as you could possibly get in that kind of situation. And it was cool that it came that close.
Yeah.
The only other thing would have been with that first buck, the one that came to 7 yards, you know, if I had one thing I could have done different there, if I had immediately got my bow ready and stood up after that doe passed through and like repositioned myself after that doe passed through, maybe I could have gotten myself into a different position so that maybe I could have slipped an arrow through that brush somewhere. You know, cause I was anticipating a buck coming, but when he didn't show up for the first, you know, 30 seconds or minute, I then turned my attention back to the other buck. If I had instead just said, okay, position yourself in case the buck still comes in the next 5 minutes, you know, maybe I could have slipped a shot somehow if I had prepared for that. But you just never know when you're in the moment, you're just figuring stuff out as you go. And you, you know, in that case, I had another shooter over in the other way. And
yeah,
that's what I turned my attention to.
And then I tell you too, one of the weird things that I'm noticing the more I hunt is that if you have deer in that lockdown situation, which outside of like, you know, prime rut dates in like very specific Midwest type country, you can end up with a lockdown situation in a good portion of deer season. Right. And it's a great time to have a good encounter with a deer, especially on the ground, because you can make moves. But Tyler and I find ourselves in this situation where, like, we try to make a stalk on a buck in lockdown and, like, something goes wrong. It's almost all the time. And the scenarios are so, like, individually specific that you end up being retrospective after, and you talk about, like, oh, could have done this, could have done this. You know, next time in that situation, we'll do this. And that same situation will never present itself in that sense. Mm-hmm. It's so strange. Like, the lockdown, which is what you're talking about here, it's not like lockdown proper, like people talk about, you know, oh, November 12th through the 18th, but it's like a lockdown scenario where the buck is with a doe. It's such a fun and like a thrilling experience, but it's actually really difficult to like loose an arrow in that situation.
Dude, and this is where I was wanting to go with this is, you know, for you, Mark, and for us, we decided to start putting our hunting experiences either in audio form here on the podcast stuff or in video form on YouTube, you know, years ago, years before us.
2013 for
Mark,
man.
Yeah. Y'all go back and check that out. But you're going to fail more often than you're going. I mean, despite what the guys on the forums might say about themselves, you're going to fail more than you're going to succeed in this. And that's what keeps it fun. But at the same time, there's this thing about hunting, and it's a macho man, egotistical atmosphere that we often find ourselves in, or reading we're involved some way, whether we're reading about it or we're actually in an argument with somebody or whatever, right? And online, people, you know, as we know, can be pretty antagonistic towards each other and attacking. And I guess my thought here is that I can think of a specific time when I started to when dealing with mean people, for lack of a better word, was something that I struggled with. And then kind of when I was able to just like brush that off and not pay too much attention to it. But there is this thing that's going to always happen when you put your deer hunting, you know, out there for the public eye. And it's going to be the fact that you fail a lot and everybody else has those retrospective ideas about what you should have done despite what your retrospect is. So, you know, I guess to kind of ask a question here, you know, how do you, like, do you remember a time when you started to be able to deal with that better, or a time when it was hard for you prior to that? And then, you know, how do we kind of make sense of, you know, how we should approach that stuff going forward? And like, you know, essentially competition, you know, I just want to hear this from you, 'cause you've been doing it for so long, and you're one of the, I guess, kind of younger generation guys that has been also dealing with this stuff for a long time. Like, how do you put that aside? How do you deal with that stuff? And, you know, how do you process everything that goes along with it?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something I've dealt with. And I don't know if there's, like, any silver bullet, but I think everyone has to at some point just come to terms with, you gotta learn to shut out the outside noise and become comfortable with who you are and what you do, and you know, stop valuing yourself or your accomplishments or the way you do things by way of other people's opinions. So for a lot of years, that was something that didn't come naturally to me. Like, I grew up as a kid who was a people pleaser. I loved, you know, I was always the kid that did everything right. And so I cared a lot about what my parents thought and my teachers thought and my friends thought and all that. So I guess I was naturally, and I think maybe most people are like that, but naturally, you know, as I started sharing my experiences and stories online, I fed a lot off of, you know, outside feedback. And I really loved the positive feedback. And I really loved the fact that people enjoyed the stories and that I was helping people or inspiring people or encouraging people or whatever. But yeah, like the negative stuff
definitely impacted me. And I think with age and maturity and just kind of being around the block, you just have to learn to shut out the outside noise. And what I have come to realize is that, you know, paying too much attention to either the good feedback or the bad feedback is not healthy.
Yes.
So I try to not get too high about anything. I try not to get too low about anything.
It's like when your mom tells you did a good job, right? It's like, okay, sure.
right. Most of that stuff's best if you just let it go in one ear and go out the other and just do the best you can do and do things the right way as best as you know how. And, you know, whether it's your career like it is for the three of us, or if it's just this passion, this pastime that you love, man, there's no reason why we should be letting other people's negative attitudes bring us down. So these days, you know, when you post something online, there's going to be a whole bunch of keyboard warriors out there who are going to pick it apart or say something. So one, I just don't look at comments very much anymore because I just don't need to, you know, wallow in that kind of filth where there's going to be like one thing I have realized that I didn't see as much growing up as just in regular life. But there are just people out there who are just nasty, unhappy, want to bring other people down. Like I live my life in such a way that I want to help other people and I want other people to be happy, healthy people. And I would never say something to someone to make them feel worse. I would never do something to someone to bring them down. But there are other people that are different apparently. And especially when it comes to the online medium, there's some category of folks out there who just like to crap all over other people, talk smack, beat people up, whatever. And my biggest antidote, I guess, to that has been now when I see something like that, I just think, gosh, like what is wrong with this person? How unhappy must this person be? What must be going on in this person's life that he or she is so miserable that they're choosing to spend their time like trolling other people's, you know, lives or work or whatever, just to talk bad about it or just to trash someone's appearance or what they're trying to do. So I feel bad for those people now.
Yeah.
And I focus on my own happiness or satisfaction with what I'm doing and trying to do good work and do good stuff. And, you know, when it comes to just hunting in general, I think we all just got to get better at hunting our own hunt. Like, do your own thing, do what you enjoy, have fun, do it for whatever the right reasons are for you, and turn out the noise. I think we've all become too sensitive and worried about the outside perspective because social media makes it so easy to hear from these people. These people don't know us. These people don't know our lives or our backstories or what we're going through. So why are we letting their words impact us?
Yeah.
So
I just want to interject real quick because, this is something that I want like the listener to understand that it's not just, some, you know, I guess, quote unquote, hunting celebrities sitting here talking about how people are talking noise. This has been on my heart this season because I have friends that are not in the public eye that may peruse Instagram and think that everybody out there is putting great shots on deer and killing them and they're big. And it's like, it makes them feel like a loser. And so I think like even passively, you know, we have to kind of understand that like we can even be passively maybe boastful or something like that. And, you know, just think about other people when it comes to how we present all this stuff, even just as like a normal dude that's out there hunting or whatever. You just got to be careful because, you know, even like, I mean, I'm telling you, even decent people will every once in a while slip up and crack on somebody, you know, about it when it's probably not really an appropriate thing to do. And, you know, we all have a bad day, man. So.
People will fail you, right? That's why you got to be able to let stuff roll off. You know, it's like one of the things that Tyler and I, you know, we have such a close relationship and we're around each other so much that, like, you know, I might be real snappy one day or whatever, and I just have to rely on Tyler's grace to understand that, hey, man, I actually love you, and I'm not trying to you want a hug right now or like I mean,
are you talking about, is that a question?
Yeah. I mean, cause no, but like in general, like you know, as the receiver of that kind of stuff, it's probably pretty healthy to just give people the benefit of the doubt, you know, because it's just like
for sure,
you know,
yeah,
people can be crappy, but they don't always mean it that
yeah,
way.
Yeah. You know? And I guess I want this to be an encouragement for people who are listening to know that, like, these are things that, you know, Mark has dealt with for a long time. We've dealt with, that are, you know, some just straight up people just being very grouchy and saying some mean stuff and attacking your appearance and all this other stuff. And really this, the deer hunting thing that we do and we're talking about is, it shouldn't really be a competition, you know, it should be just fun, man. And that's what it was, you know, when we hunted together this past week or so, whenever that was, right before Christmas. So, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot, like I said, because I have guys that have reached out to me like, man, I just feel like I'm such a terrible hunter. It's like, man, who cares? You know, like, you don't have to be a good hunter. You don't have to, you don't have to listen to all these clowns tell you how they can set up, you know, within 30 yards of a buck bed and not be heard or seen and kill the deer when he stands up in his bed. I mean, that's cool. I think it's cool. But at the same time, like, if you don't do that, it doesn't make your experience any less valuable. You know what I mean? What you do is go out there and have fun. That's what you need to do. Mm-hmm. I think you were kind of getting to that at the end there, Mark. And I just kind of want to, you know, I just wanted to see from a guy who's dealt with it for a while now. I mean, certainly 13 years ago, that video, you were getting some hate. I'm sure.
Hey,
you
what do we talk about? No crapping on the people, Tyler.
Hey, so on that note, no hate, but I seriously was in some like FOMO mode that morning.
Oh, yeah.
Because Tyler and I decided to kind of like lay up. We were going to drive around and scout a little bit that morning because it's kind of a newer area for us as well. And Mark's going out there just going crazy seeing deer everywhere. And we're like, dadgummit, this Yankee is dadgum on our deer over here. What's going on? So, like, we quickly were, you know, rushing to make plans to get out that evening. And we all had some nice hunts that evening. Tyler and I were around deer. You kind of switched to a more ambush style setup, I think, for the evening, right? Like, how did you take what you learned that morning to kind of lead you in the right direction there?
Well, you're a little off.
Okay. I've been told that before.
Yeah. I shifted to a different glassing knob for that evening because I wanted one more night to see a new zone. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, okay, if I have two, you know, morning to evening to watch two kind of adjacent zones, I'll have a good sense of what's happening and then I can set up for an ambush tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So I didn't see much that night. A few little bucks in the doe. The next morning I did the ambush. Do you want me to tell you the 30-second version of that?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So basically, after not seeing much the night before, I decided that the majority of the deer I'd seen had been cruising in and out of these deep draws. They were going either up and down the points or across from point to point. And if you remember, like, the very first day on my map, I saw these saddles in the points. Mm-hmm. And I thought, man, they might be traveling from point to point through these saddles. And that ended up being true. So for day two, I thought I would set up down in the bottom of these draws where the saddles converged with the low points of the draw itself. So imagine like a T, you've got a long vertical line that is your low spot, you know, separating two points. That's your draw separating these two points. And then there's a crossways low spot that are these saddles going across the two points. So I set up down there where a lot of that buck activity had been the day before. I was able to find a cool spot with the wind where it sucked down kind of into like this water source behind me. And it was a great setup and ended up having a nice buck come down one of those draws and would have came right down the pipe to me. He stopped at about 43, 44 yards and like made kind of like scent, smelling a licking branch. And then instead of coming down the rest of the way to me, where I was at like the convergence of three of these draws, he instead hopped the point and went up and across the point on the high ground, you know, at 50 yards or something like that. And that was my best encounter that morning. Came really close to doing the thing I wanted. I didn't want to take a 43 yard shot, at, you know, buck that's uphill of me. You guys kept talking about how small these deer are body wise. And, I'm not interested in wounding a deer or missing it. So I didn't take that shot. I like to be 40 or in, even on bucks in the Midwest. So 43 on a little Texas buck didn't seem like a good idea to me. So that was my morning. And ambush set up in a different place in the evening, saw nothing. So that was my day two.
Man, yeah, that's it's weird how that happened on this hunt a lot, where it's like you think you're building towards something and then you have a zero. And you're like, what is going on? Yeah. So so as to leave a little intrigue for the viewer, I think that we should let them catch the rest of this thing, you know, like the minute by minute on the Buck Truck episode that comes out next year. But Mark, I would like to kind of talk takeaways a little bit, because, you know, this is hunting that's a little bit similar to what I grew up doing, and you know, it is our home state. For you, you've traveled some and hunted some stuff kind of like it, but I know it's a little bit different. Like, what's a big takeaway that you had from hunting this area or from just this trip?
Oh, man.
There weren't any. Okay, good.
No, I mean, there is. There wasn't like a big lesson learned as far as like how to hunt deer. Mm-hmm. It was more so just like deer are deer. Mm-hmm. I think that might be a thing. Like I've now been able to hunt deer from as far south. I've hunted whitetails as far south about as you can get them, about as far north as you can get them in the United States outside of Canada. And east to west, you know, I've hunted as far west as Idaho and east as far as Maine. And there are a lot of things that they do the same from place to place, and you can count on it. At the same time, there's regional and terrain differences across each one. But if you learn the basics of deer behavior and biology and survival, you can hunt them anywhere of these places, any one of these places. It's just a matter of kind of adjusting per the region and per like the set of circumstances you have. And I love that, because you need to understand the basics, but then you have to be like quickly flexible to the place and situation you're at. And so in this case, you know, coming into this area, I had no idea what Texas would be like or what these deer would be like. I show up day one, don't know what it's going to look like until sun rises. Then right away, okay, here's the situation. I've got open country. I've got some hills. I've got some topography, and bam, here's some deer. And I'm seeing behaviors that I recognize. Okay, that's probably a buck with a doe. I think these ones are cruising. He's acting like there's a doe in there. I've seen that before. I know it goes on during lockdown in Michigan or Iowa or wherever. So I'm going to make a move using the terrain, which is now my kind of my advantage here. And I'm going to do a thing that I've done in the past and use the set of circumstances I have here. And, you know, that was basically how I approached the rest of the hunt, and, you know, very nearly worked a couple times. So I think the big takeaway is that it's really fun to hunt new places. Deer are deer everywhere, but there's these fun regional flares that I love learning, and I love, you know, attacking and kind of studying and trying to figure out. And I think all these things make you a better hunter. Mm-hmm. So I'm really thankful for the opportunity to hunt deer in a lot of different places. And, maybe my biggest takeaway is that whitetails are just really, really cool. And I love chasing them, watching them, studying them, and eating them.
Me too. Me too, man.
Yeah, I've been eating quite a bit of it here lately. It's nice to restock the old deep freezes this time of year. That way you got plenty of deer meat. But, you know, it's kind of like a weird conundrum that we end up in as hunters and fishermen, just outdoors people, where like Tyler and I talk about this a lot, where we go to a really cool place and then we're like, man, I'd like to go back there. But there's so many other cool places out there,
right,
that you just hardly ever make it back to some of this stuff, you know? And it's almost like it's just a fond memory, and that's what it's always going to be. Do you foresee yourself wanting to go back and do a hunt like this in a similar area? Or do you think you had your fill and kind of want to go just try more new stuff?
No, you know what? This is one I would go and do again.
Yeah.
I would go and do this again. Like, this is my kind of deer hunting, where you can see a lot of, we saw a good number of deer. And I really like seeing deer. Mm-hmm. I love just watching animals. I could be happy just watching them most of the time. So, you know, this is the kind of hunt that I get a kick out of. There's a lot of visibility. There's action. There's the opportunity to make something happen. So yes, I would do this again for sure.
So I guess at this point, you know, you're probably, I know fishing is on your mind, but you still have maybe some opportunities in the deer woods. And this is a time of year that a lot of people are not they're not, you know, out in the woods doing the deer thing anymore. They're kind of starting to move on too. And there's this period for us. It feels long, but for Michiganders, I imagine it feels extremely long, where like deer season's kind of over and fishing doesn't start for a while. What are you doing this time of year? You know, KC and I have some deer hunting left to do, so it's not over for us, but you know, for those who may be kind of done, tagged out or whatever, what do you like to do this time of year before fishing starts?
You know, I kind of like this 3-month period to kind of reset. I don't mind hibernating a little bit during this time period. Kind of, I dive into different
Mexican food, so you'd be prime for hibernation.
Pack on some extra layers. I'll pack on. I'll dig into new projects this time of year. I like to do a lot of my writing. I read a lot this time of year. This is when I do some, you know, I really dig into a bunch of books and sit by the fire and do that kind of thing. But as far as outside, you know, I'll be doing some scouting and some habitat work here over the next couple months on the whitetail side. I'm as re-energized for whitetails and not burned out by the end of the season as I've been in like a decade. Like
that's awesome.
I'm still stoked on whitetails right now, where a lot of years, by the time Christmas hits, I'm like, I need a freaking break.
Yeah. What do you attribute that to?
You know, I think we've talked about it here, maybe it was Rough Fresh episodes probably, but you know, one of my biggest goal from a hunting perspective this year was to just get back to the fun. Kind of like we talked about earlier, just doing things for what I care about, what would be fun for me, you know, hunting for my own reasons in my own way and for my own satisfaction, and not caring about what other people think or what other people think I should do, or if I need to worry about how many big bucks I kill or how big a buck I kill, or is this big enough or is this cool enough or is this content good enough. This year I said, screw all that. Just get back to why you fell in love with hunting in the first place. When you're making decisions about what you want to do, choose the thing that would bring you joy. And that's what I did this year. And yeah, I just have had a lot of fun. I didn't travel. I still travel a good bit, but not a crazy amount. And that allowed me to be home more. That allowed me to do more hunting and spending time with my family. I got to help my dad at our deer camp. Got to take my 4-year-old son out for like, I don't know, 8 or 9 hunts this year, which is awesome. We had some really cool encounters. We've almost killed does a couple times. We almost killed a big buck a couple times. I got to go hunt places that I wanted to hunt just because they're fun places to hunt, not because I thought it was my best chance to kill a Boone and Crockett or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it just has energized me. It's kept me having fun with it, because that's cool. What it's all about.
That's cool, dude.
I'm jacked.
Yeah,
I'm jacked so about awesome. The next season.
I'm pumped for you, man. And I hope the postseason scouting and all that goes really well for you and you find what you're looking for there. But, you know, you did mention that you like to read and write a little bit. This is the portion of the episode, finally, where you can do plugs. And you are an author. Talk about that a little bit.
Oh, yeah. You know, my last book, my most recent book, would be That Wild Country, which everyone should go out and buy 5 copies of, give them to all your parents, friends, and family.
Yeah, post-Christmas, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Use your gift cards that you got from Santa. But yeah, that book is, you know, it's about the history and future of our public lands here in America. Kind of details how we got these places and what we need to do to keep them around. And I explore that subject by sharing a bunch of stories of myself out there fishing, hunting, camping, climbing, all that kind of fun stuff. So it's a fun book, I think, for people that like the outdoors. And I'm currently working on some new ideas for what book number 2 will be, and excited about that. So
I can't wait for you to write about me, man.
You very likely will be in one of these upcoming books, my friend, because shared a very memorable trip. That
one of? Is, how about that?
Woo,
man.
Yeah.
One or more.
You got a pen in each hand, dude. Just
a better believe it. I got a pen in each hand and a jalapeno in my boot.
That's a Serrano, Mark. You got to get your pepper dry.
I'm a work in progress, buddy.
Dude, we are very thankful to get to have you come down, do some hunting with you, and get to hang out. And I can't wait to, you know, now we're coworkers, man. We're all part of the Meat Eater crew, and we're going to do some more hunting together. So, you know, probably won't let the general public into our plans here. So maybe when we get off the phone, we can kind of make plans. And one of the best things about this time of year, as we're kind of finishing up some hunts and doing some things, is like just getting to dream a little bit about what next season holds. And I'm excited to do some of that. Tyler and I are about to do some road tripping together, and I bet you we're going to be doing some dreaming and some thinking. We already been doing some of it this morning. So let's find a way to involve each other in that a little bit more, man, and do some hunting together.
Sounds good to me. Let's make it happen.
Well, dude, we really appreciate you coming down. Appreciate your thoughts on Texas hunting. And I hope you don't freeze to death up there in Michigan.
I'll be all right up here. Thank you guys again for the invite and having me down. You guys are great hosts. And I had a blast. I appreciate it.
And with that, we kick Mark Kenyon out of Texas. He's no longer a bit allowed to be here.
That's all, folks.
Yeah, it's all. No longer allowed to be here. Maybe we might let him back one day. I don't know. But if you do want to hear kind of more of our story and our take about the whole season, really, the most recent Wired to Hunt podcast, or one of the most recent ones, is going to have Tyler and I on there. We'd appreciate you going and listening, giving Mark some support. We kind of gave him a hard time, but he is a nice guy, friend of ours. So we were thankful to get to for him to come down and hang out and do some hunting. Tyler, looking back, we haven't done this at all.
Let's go to looking back, Texas.
What was the coolest part of 22?
Oh my goodness! It has to be element memory.
No. Then you're going to have to make me give an obligatory answer if you do something like that.
Okay, let's keep it to element
okay,
answers.
That'll make it easier.
Coolest element moment.
Or hunting moment. How about that?
Hunting moment. Me experiencing a hunt or me just on a hunt.
Yeah.
Could be anybody else's experience. Man, that's a tough question. One that comes to mind as being one of the top moments is Right there.
Yeah. That one was good.
Hunter Dickens shooting a big old buck in South Dakota. Didn't think he was going to find it. And we found it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good moment.
That was fun.
That was about near like a football huddle. Yeah. Getting ready to go out and just
that was pretty unbelievable.
Crush people.
That was a good one. It's a hard thing to do, to kind of describe that, like what a top moment would be. Because everything is pretty special. But, like, I think about humor a lot, and funny things are big for me. So the time that me, you, and Clay all ended up in the same spot trying to hunt after we all dispersed, it really is, like, up there for, like, things that are really funny and that I will think about for a long time. Like, that's a memory right there. Because I can just remember Clay's face, like, what are you doing here?
Why are you in my spot?
It was pretty good.
Like, dude, you're a mile from your spot. That was good. I think another highlight for me was Eric's first buck. That was a good moment. Being able to find that buck real easily. Just like the whole morning was a good deal. We got to finally celebrate Eric buck and a buck, in East Texas, which we haven't really done a lot of. So that was fun. Man, honestly, I've been thinking about this a little bit. I killed two bucks this year. I had kind of a tough year overall, which I'm still going. We're about to go kill some more bucks, but
2022 is over.
Yeah, 2022 is over.
Yeah.
I killed two bucks and, both of them were like weird celebration moments for me. Like they were kind of short lived because, you and I hopped on the phone immediately after I shot in Nebraska because you heard me shoot. It was a weird deal where like I basically just like from there was like, oh, I got to get out of the stand and go meet KC instead of like having the freak out moment, in the stand. It was just like really fast paced. And then in Kansas, it was kind of a similar thing where like, it happened real suddenly. There was no lead up. The deer was literally at 15 yards when I first saw him. And then I was pretty sure I watched him fall, but not 100%. So that made things kind of like, what should I do now? And you get to thinking logistically, especially with us, because we had five dudes traveling around, like who helps here, who does what, who brings the lights, who brings the cameras. It's like, it kind of, you know, I'm not even trying to complain at all. I'm just saying it's different, and it kind of made my celebrations weird and different. So
yeah,
some of my best moments were actually not – my favorite moments were actually not really my moments. But honestly, I didn't – I keep forgetting about this, but I did shoot a big old mule deer, and that was a really good moment. Mm. That was an intense deal there because, you know, for all the reasons that I've talked about in that podcast, if you haven't heard about that, you should go listen to that podcast after that. It was like early September when I shot that deer.
So. I thought you were about to bust out an episode number. I was like, no way do you know this.
Yeah, I don't know. I used to know the episode numbers because I uploaded them, but I don't upload them very much anymore. Mm. So
the I think you had a pretty good hunt with your fam recently too. We haven't talked about that.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was the last hunt of 2022. Did some duck hunting with Jet, and we had a good time, man. Yeah. We shot some birds. I was picking drakes. It was fun.
That's cool.
Dude. And he shot really well. It surprised me because he doesn't like shooting guns. And I got these they're a sound suppressing headphone, but they like go in your ear canals. They're not like the Walker big, you know, they're low profile. They work really good, man.
That's cool.
And so I didn't have a headache. I shot like, you know, a box of shells and didn't have a headache. I usually do when I shoot duck loads, especially. And then he had a good time. The first time he's ever had a good time, which he shot really well too. Like he was shooting birds out of the air and stuff, which was surprising because he just hasn't shot very much, but you know, just kind of it's one of those things where, you know, Levi's pretty good at shooting a bow, but he's probably pretty good at shooting other things too, or he probably can throw a football pretty well and lead a guy pretty well, you know? It's kind of like that, just that instinct and that intuition carries over, you know? You have different instincts that kind of are maybe like athletic versus not, and like Jet's out there being the quarterback at recess every day, you know? So, you know, you learn how to lead things, you know, that way. Obviously, different speeds and stuff, but it just surprised me, man. I was like super happy with the way he shot and just bragging on him a lot. So
it's good.
It was fun, man.
Yeah. Glad y'all got to go do that and have fun with that. I think that celebration had just changed a lot with the way we do stuff now. And this is a little insight maybe that y'all don't care to hear, but like production kind of affects celebration some. It kind of stinks. But in the long run, it's really cool to have the video of how things go and be able to look back on that. We were just talking about this off air a while ago. So, like, I don't mind it, but, like, I can just remember, like, say, like, the 2020 deer I killed in Kansas where it was just pretty much me, your dad, and Drew, and then you came up shortly thereafter. It's just a lot different than the way we do stuff now, you know?
Yep.
And that's like, it makes that stuff really special too, to think back about that kind of stuff too. So,
well, we also forgot the stills camera in Kansas. So, I mean, like 35 minutes to go get a stills camera, and so like all that is just kind of a logistical mind processing thing that kind of takes you out of the moment and puts you in this whole like, well, got some work to do, you know. And I don't know. I think maybe in the future, or coming up this year, I'll kind of process that a lot more and think about like how I can
might you get us a head of production or something, you know what I mean?
Man, that would be a great idea. Oh gosh.
He's sitting over here. Y'all know Eric, he's really good at what he does, but we have to give him a hard time sometimes.
Yep, especially KC.
Anyways, the first joke cracked on Eric of 22. That's not true at all, actually. I'm sure there's been more.
23.
Man. Hey, what was the first joke of 22? I don't know.
First of 22?
Yeah.
It was probably telling Eric that we could pay him.
Probably. What a joke. Oh, man. Well, I hope you'll have plenty of jokes going already for this year. It's time to start some new ones. Be thinking about it. Be strategizing about that. And maybe think about strategizing about whitetails as well. Because if you're like us, you don't ever really stop.
Nope.
I've been,
man, you had a Liver King moment right there, dude. That was pretty impressive. But you were all natty. That's the only difference.
Well, you think. Just wait, bro. About to have them Ablett number 6 and 8 come in up there on top. But
Oh, man.
Sorry, I took that away from you.
That's okay. It was good. I was going to say that...
Cast and catch out.
I haven't... I haven't not... I've been on the maps a lot. It's like looking at places that are 11 months out.
Ooh.
You know what I mean?
That's cool, dude.
Isn't that wild?
That's good, man. Maybe. Means you're living in it, dude.
But if it doesn't pay off, we're real mad. So yeah, we have to work hard to actually make it worth it, okay?
We usually do. We usually do.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just because you're looking, trying to shoot a deer in Utah doesn't mean it's going to happen, mm-hmm. You know?
That's right. That's right. Well, guys, it's good to dream. Good to think about that stuff. The next deer season could still be going for you right now, but a lot of people are looking forward to the next year, and it is never a bad time to be thinking about whitetails. So
right.
Get out there, do that postseason scouting stuff. We might be talking about that some once our postseason starts here, and then after that, it's time to have fun, shoot pigs, and eat a lot of Mexican food.
Yeah, so that's for sure. I'm going to be thinking about that and remembering that this is my element.
And you should live in it.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, Wild Game Recipes for the Grill, Smoker, Camp Stove, and Campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at the Meat Eater.com. Hope to see you at the show.